to speak with Sharon or our guest, the phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810. Here again, Sharon Kay.
Very happy to have for our 2022 visit, and that's our Metro Schools Director, Dr. Adrian Battle. Dr. Battle, you are again on the battlefield. Every time I talk to you, I feel like I'm talking to a warrior woman. She is hard at work in the Metro Public School System, and happy to be able to carve a few moments of her time to get some, of course, some fresh information. Dr. Battle, it has been since last year, a couple of months before the end of the school year or the end of 2021, the last time I checked in with you. So I'm hoping that you're still optimistic as you were the last time I talked to you.
Yes, ma'am. My work continues here in Metro Nashville Public Schools, and despite some of the challenges that we faced as a country over the last few years, we're going to continue to focus where we need to, and it's making sure that our young people have what they need, mm-hmm. and that all of our teachers and support staff are here just caring for our kids and pouring into them every day.
Now, over the holiday season, and as the students prepared and the staff prepared and teachers prepared to come back, was this an opportunity that people used to get their COVID testing done or get their vaccination round started? What happened, and how did that result in this beginning of the school session?
Well, we surely encouraged everyone to continue to be vaccinated and to get boosted, to mask up and just take on all those mitigation strategies that help us with our continuity of learning for our students. We've continued to provide clinics and vaccination opportunities, not only for our students and staff, but for anyone who is in need. And so we've definitely leveraged the break to make sure that we were ramping up our mitigation strategies and mm-hmm. opportunities for everyone to do just that. That started, of course, quite a while ago. We leveraged the holiday break and continue that great work throughout this next semester.
So how do the numbers stack up during this semester? We're just so early into, the beginning of it, and still, it sounds terrible as you listen nationally. How are we looking inside the Metro school system now?
Yes, great question. So nearing the end of last year, our first semester of the school year, we were starting to see somewhat of a decline in cases, both with our students and with our adults. And just like what's happening in our community and across the country, we did experience the same uptick that's being reported in the media on a daily basis. We're seeing far more of our students who are testing positive than months past. We still have some staff members who are testing positive mm-hmm. as well with this new variant. And so we know that it's pretty aggressive with regards to being able to be transmitted. And so it's been hard on our team and our district and districts across the state. But you know what? So far this year, knock mm-hmm. on wood, we've been able to keep schools open, and we haven't had to close or ask for a remote waiver. We're grateful to our MNPS team, our teachers, school administrators, mm-hmm. our support staff. Everybody's just been stepping up, leaning in, and working together to continue to provide the best possible learning experiences for students, for our students, as we continue to navigate this pandemic.
Well, as I know that you all have and do for the children, much of the news cycles have been on the upset and angry parents that don't want their children to wear a mask or don't want to do preventive measures, etc. Have you all encountered any of that in the Metro Public School System?
Well, we've definitely not been immune to those conversations. Mm-hmm. And, I'm just reflecting back a few weeks ago coming into this second semester. My comments were that we would be foolish to lessen or weaken our mitigation strategies.
Mm-hmm.
We've had some of the strongest mitigation protocols in the state.
Mm-hmm.
We have school nurses in our schools. We require masks. We're now providing KN95 masks to our schools, mm-hmm. to those in need.
Mm-hmm.
We, as I mentioned earlier, we're continuing to encourage vaccinations and providing vaccination clinics for everyone. And so it is our responsibility, yes, of course, to educate our students, but in order to do that, we have to make sure they're safe. And as a result, mm-hmm. we have one of the strongest continuity of learning plans right here in our district that is keeping our students as safe as possible, but also keeping them in person, mm-hmm. Learning and just growing every day.
So you all have been able to receive already enough of the KN95 mask for the children as well as the teachers and the staff?
So we're not requiring the KN95 masks, but we have purchased nearly a million masks for our staff and our students.
Mm-hmm.
We've already started distributing them to our schools, mm-hmm. to make sure, because we know the KN95 masks are more effective with this new variant.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not required. Lots of students and staff members come with their own masks, but we want to make sure that if a student is in need and if they, you know, are encouraged to use a KN95, that mm-hmm. we have one available for them. And multiple ones. So, you know, if you need one today and tomorrow, we want to be prepared to have a mask to offer to our students to keep them and our staff to keep them protected.
Okay, that's excellent. So this million that you all have purchased, is this from the monies from the last couple of years of the pandemic funding to help the school system, et cetera? Is that where you were able to make that quantity purchase?
That's absolutely correct. We've leveraged our ESSER funds to purchase the masks to be able to provide them
mm-hmm.
to our schools. That's what those funds are for. They're there to help us increase our mitigation protocols
mm-hmm.
in our schools, but also to continue to accelerate learning for our students. And in order to accelerate learning, we have to have these mitigation protocols in place. And I'm like everyone else. Nobody just wants to wear a mask every day. I mean, if we had a choice and it was safe enough for us to do so,
mm-hmm.
many of us would not have on a mask,
mm-hmm.
but it is the responsible thing to do right now to protect our students, our staff, and our families. And I also just want to remind folks that we serve a population of students who are still not eligible to be vaccinated. We have younger students in our mm-hmm. pre-K classrooms and some in our kindergarten classrooms who are just not old enough yet for the vaccine. And so we have to be responsible to keep them protected. And their best protection right now is for those around them to be vaccinated.
Mm-hmm. Good. Well, I would think that would be our duty, you know, as fellow citizens. But apparently, you know, I must be from another planet. Now, Dr. Battle, are there any schools that can't meet the requirements as far as the ventilation is concerned? You know, I know it's been a topic off and on now for quite some time, but with the dollars that came into the region, the federal dollars and et cetera, did that give you an opportunity to do some upgrades at some of the schools where it was very much needed?
Well, it definitely gave us an opportunity to accelerate their
mm-hmm.
work. I mean, we were of the mindset in MMPS and in Nashville that we want to make sure that we have a standard of facilities for our students and our staff who work
mm-hmm.
in our schools.
Mm-hmm.
So fortunately for us, we were on a bit of a journey and making sure that we had the proper ventilation in our schools.
Mm-hmm.
But those ESSER funds, the relief funds, have definitely allowed us to accelerate our efforts to
mm-hmm.
get to and upgrade many more schools over the course of the last several months and few years since we've been navigating this. So we have definitely leveraged our funds to help increase ventilation in our schools, and we will continue to do so. We're also thankful to the mayor and Metro Council for their commitment in our capital funds.
Mm-hmm.
Their investment in our facilities through our capital
mm-hmm.
Spending plan also helps us accelerate that. So we've leveraged both ESSER funds and our capital funds to make sure that we're increasing the ventilation across all of our MMPS facilities.
Is there anyone, one or two, that may not be quite there yet and more dollars are needed from the council or the mayor's office?
You know, at this point, we have a pretty robust plan to touch every facility, but I would be remiss if I did not also continue to advocate for our schools and our school system that I think the reality is when there are enough resources, right, you can accelerate those timelines and make sure that we're making the most informed, research-based strategies and implementing them into our schools in a timely fashion. So the more resources we have, the more we're able to build the capacity to get the work done, but also to be able to purchase the equipment that we're looking to continue to upgrade in our facilities.
Okay, can you give me the numbers, or as close as you can give, on reported COVID in the school system with the students and with the what's been the impact just recently since we returned back to school here in the last couple of weeks? Teachers out sick with COVID and students.
Yes, ma'am. So last week we had about 1,200 students across our district approximately who did test positive for COVID, and approximately 300 staff. We are at the somewhat of the beginning of the second semester. The first week was professional learning for students. We've had, of course, a historical holiday, significant holiday for our students, and we've had some inclement weather. So last week was probably our most significant numbers, with about 1,200 students and 300 staff testing positive in a week's time.
That's a lot. That's a lot. And that's across the entire district?
Yes, that's correct, across our entire district.
Wow, that still seems high to me. What's been the highest level so far during the pandemic?
That would be it. So
really?
This variant is definitely having a greater impact, particularly on our students with regards to testing positive. And so that's why, as you've been mentioning, all these mitigation strategies matter. The ventilation, the masks, having the school nurses, the vaccines, it matters because we're seeing a significant impact on our students, and we're working, our teams are working tremendously hard to make sure that, again, the safety is where it needs to be, but as students are moving in and out based upon their isolation periods, that they're able to keep up with their learning and that we're keeping them moving forward. So, again, that's about 1,200 students, 300 staff across around 67,000 of our traditional students and 11,000 staff members.
That's still a lot to me. It's just a lot. And it, you know, it just feels like a lot. And since you said that's the highest, then now I realize that. So as the students, you know, there's been a lot of research and things come out recently. And I think I may have touched base with you on this maybe last year during one of our conversations about the impact of virtual classroom study versus classroom. And I'm hearing just all the stories about the mental health issues and anxiety and different things and sadness that the children are experiencing. Are you all having to deal with any of that? And can you give us any examples of what you and the staff are trying to do to help the little ones?
Yes, I mean, we're definitely seeing the impact that this pandemic has had on our students, and let's not forget our staff, because they're also navigating this in the school environment, but also personally. We have continued to invest in increasing school psychologists. We now have an advocacy center in all of our elementary schools because we want to make sure those supports are available to students immediately and daily. Our students should not have to wait on those supports when the need arises during the school day. We're investing in restorative practice assistance in all of our secondary schools, so our middle schools and our secondary schools, and we're increasing the number of social workers in MNPS to help continue to provide supports and services to our students. And so we are acknowledging and recognizing the social emotional learning needs of our, but also the mental health needs due to the trauma that our students have faced as families in this district have continued to navigate the pandemic. We've also implemented a program called Sown to Grow for our students. The program where we check in with them daily. Mm-hmm. And they get an opportunity to tell us how they're feeling, what's going on, is there something that we can help with, so that our teams can respond. And we have navigators that are paired with students to monitor that information, mm-hmm. to provide feedback, and to give them the resources they need when they express that need.
How, is there such a thing as this? Because it's been a long time since my kids were in metro schools, okay, a long time. Is there still such a thing as parent meetings and PTAs and all that? I know it's probably virtual, but is there still such a thing as that?
Yes, ma'am, and we have a parent conferences coming up in about a month. I believe it's in February. We also have a round in the fall. So we did have parent-teacher conferences back in the fall. We allowed for both virtual and in-person opportunities for families based upon their needs, simply because our kids were out of school. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to make sure that we're also getting parents what they need, because parent involvement, engagement is critical,
right,
to the work we're doing right now. We have to pay close attention to every student. Our model right now is every student known, and in order for us to know our students well, we have to have all those things I've already talked about, but we also have to have our parents engaged and, yeah, and working closely with our school teams.
What have some of the parents said, you know, and as it relates to the technology needs and the things that they've noticed as a parent, or have they noticed any changes in their student since they went to school virtually a lot of last year?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good segue from my last comment, because as we were engaging with our parents, we set up lots of cabinets and stakeholder engagement opportunities to hear all of our stakeholders, and to your question specifically, our parents. And what I heard from our parents most frequently is that I want my child to be known. Mm-hmm. I want them to be cared for. I want them to continue to be on a path of success. And that's why we have our driving model right now, which is every student known, because that's what parents asking of us. They want to know that we recognize and acknowledging what's happening, right, currently, and what's happened over the last few years, and that we're going to be responsive to those needs, whether that be the needs, mental health needs, whether it's the academic needs, mm-hmm. and the learning progress that we need for our students. Mm-hmm. That's from them. They want to know that we're increasing our school psychologists and our social workers and immediate supports to students on the ground. Mm-hmm. They want to know we're a restorative practice district, that if their child makes a mistake as a result of all that they've been dealing with, that we're going to work with them to the best of our ability, understand them, and really give them what they need as we get back on track and back to that more normal pattern, mm-hmm. of learning and the rhythm of a school year.
And I'm at least glad that, you know, they are sharing this and, you know, utilizing the resources that they have. They're available to them in our system. And have you seen any changes in school violence, guns, students bringing guns? I'm talking about the high school age or middle school age students. And can you give us some ideas of, do you have plans to have more resource officers, or what the plans might be?
So with regards to student behavior and student incidents, we're actually seeing a decrease in those incidents across our schools. Now, unfortunately, and we can have a longer conversation about this, because laws have changed around this, and we're definitely seeing the impact of that in our schools. We have seen quite a number of weapons on our campus this year. Now, fortunately, that's not resulted into any harm of anyone, or any, you know, significant injury to any of our students or staff, and that's because we have really strong protocols in place. That's because we have an avenue for which our students can communicate with us and tell us what's going on, and we're not going to remove those strategies for the fear of finding something, because we need to find it. That is the whole intent. We want to make sure that we're keeping our schools safe, but it is a conversation that we're having with others, our lawmakers, with with MNPD and with juvenile courts that as a community, we've got to figure this access to weapons out. We're definitely not distributing them across our schools and facilities, but it's going to take adults and others to lock weapons up if they have them and to make sure that they're secure, because our young people do not need access and should not have access to those types of weapons, and they definitely don't need access to them on our school premise. So we have seen some of that, particularly last semester. We're continuing to be pretty aggressive in our messaging to our students and their families around our expectations for that, because I have a vision and goal for all of our campuses to continue to remain safe.
Well, that's good to know, because, I mean, those issues, they plague school systems, and they really, really have get your attention as a parent and a member of the community. A couple of more questions I have for you before we go and remind the audience, I am just delighted to have the director of the Metro School System, Dr. Adrian Battle, with me. Dr. Battle has been excellent at responding when we need her to come on and give us updated information about our school system and our precious children. You all know we love the babies, and we want them to have their educations and in an environment that's safe, and you all and healthy are doing just an excellent job, Dr. Bell. Every time I talk to you, I know no one is perfect. I don't know any perfect people, but you're still, you know, always doing a great job, and I deeply appreciate that, because it's very important. That position has always been so political. Now, a couple of things that I want to check in with you on. When there was a recent story, I believe Virginia, where at a school board meeting, a mother was going to pistol pack her kid and send them to school because she did not want them to wear a mask. That sent chills down my spine that she would make that statement at a school board meeting and not be knowing she's videotaped. But we have not had anything like that here in Nashville. Is that correct?
Unfortunately, we have not had any situation like that. I think that incident is just, it's a reminder. You know, our kids are always watching. Our kids are always listening. They're learning from us, and they're expecting for us as adults to remain civil and to, you know, in times like this, really demonstrate to them how do we pull together to make sure that we're doing what's best for everyone. And so, you know, just hearing and seeing and reading about that incident, that's what really struck me, is just we've got to be mindful as adults what that means to our students and how they will continue to work together for generations to come. But we're fortunate that we've not had an incident like that. I mean, with any tough and major decision as requiring masks in schools, you can always anticipate there will be some opposition to that. But, you know, we didn't get into this work to make easy decisions. And, you know, all of this we take very seriously. And so what we've continued to do is to continue to prioritize safety of our students. And that has been the way in which we've made these decisions around mitigation strategies. And that's what I fully intend to continue to do.
Yeah. Well, and for it was just a bad example of parenting on a national scale. I mean, I just couldn't believe this mother would make that statement. Mothers have changed. That's why I was asking. And we're sitting here on just about the eve of Black History Month, which starts next Tuesday. And then we have a newly signed measure by the governor that there shall be no discussion of critical race or anything of that nature, or anything that brings discomfort to white children. So how do you have a Black History Month in school? And y'all, the books are banned, and you can't say anything about being Black. What do you call it? Just History Month? I mean, do you all get to say the word Black? Do you get to have lessons and discuss figures in history? Do you, without somebody's feelings being hurt? I mean, what kind of tap dance are you all going to have to do during the month of February?
Ms. Sharon Kay, if I can just say, we will continue to teach the truth in Metro National Public Schools. We don't intend to tap dance around Black History Month and the history that all of our students deserve to learn and to be aware of. That doesn't mean that we're going to, you know, be out of compliance with anything. But what we fully intend to do is to teach the truth of our to our students. We currently haven't banned any materials or books. We're asking our educators to be educators, to be professionals, to follow the scope and sequence as it has been written in an age-appropriate way. Mm-hmm. We're going to continue to feed our students and to make sure our NMPS students, when they graduate from our system, they know, they are aware, they have access to the truth and the history of our country.
And then that, I would say, is the way it should be, because that's the facts. Dr. Battle, I thank you so much, because I was like, I don't know what these teachers, that, you know, they're going to be tied up like a pretzel. I mean, how are they going to be able to do this? So, you know, you just said it, and that was that. As far as I'm concerned, it don't get any clearer than that. And we shall see how this month goes. And of course, you all know, my audience knows, Sharon Kay, you'll be watching, okay? I'll be checking, I'll be watching. Dr. Battle, for people to keep up on the system, they may or may not have students in there, or just might be concerned citizens, the best way is the website, the Facebook, or what?
Yes, ma'am. They can keep up with all the happenings of Metro National Public Schools on our website at mnps.org and all of our social media channels, Facebook, Twitter. We try to keep our families and those in the community up to date around what's going on and all of the great news happening at all of our MNPS schools.
Okay, and if anybody wants to ask you about something there within the district or have a concern, is it, are you accessible by phone call?
Yes, ma'am. They can reach me and my staff through our Family Information Center. That number is 615-259-4636.
There you go. No excuses, y'all. Dr. Adrienne Battle, the director of the Metro School System, we thank you so much for your time and the work that you do in education and for the community. And I look forward to checking. One of these days, I look forward to you sitting in the studio with me, okay? That's what I'm saying. Maybe that day can come. That can come soon. Anyway, and hopefully in 22. Dr. Battle, thank you so much for your time, and you have a good rest of the day.
You do too. Thank you so much.
That was good information. Glad to hear that they can teach Black History Month history in the classroom. Praise the Lord. We'll see how long that lasts. I'm sure someone will be complaining and trying to undo it. Oh, my God, ban those books, Lord.
It should be teaching Christopher Columbus.
There's no issue with him.
Yeah.
It's just Black.
But I feel offended.
It's race.
I think that Christopher Columbus, that offends me.
I think I said, I coined the phrase critical white theory,
yeah.
CWT. I am traumatized.
Yeah, I am too.
I'm like, oh my God, I can't take no more. Y'all are hurting my feelings. It's too much. Let's take a time out and we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
Want to give your opinion today? The phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Life insurance is one of those subjects that makes people want to change the subject rather than admit they probably don't have enough. That's why State Farm agent Terry W. Jones focuses on how the benefits of life insurance actually live on by asking people to think in terms of life without having to sell the house, insurance, or life without having to give up college, insurance. Find out how the benefits of life insurance can live on for your family. Call State Farm agent Terry W. Jones in Nashville at 615-256-6066 or online at terrywjones.net and put the life back in life insurance.
A little bit busy here at times on 65 up by Metro Center and Rosa Parks. It's a bit crazy out there in Rutherford County on that earlier rank on 840 westbound at Emmaville Road. Still got traffic backed up. It's still slow to the north now on 65 up into Robertson County. This traffic report brought to you by PensacolaBeach.com. I'm Commander Chuck with your on-time traffic.
Support for WFSK comes from National Shows 2. Presenting 7-time Grammy winner Gladys Knight. The enchanting voice of Gladys Knight, one impressive hit after another. Gladys Knight, April 25th at the Ryman. Tickets are available at Ryman.com. WFSK's Artist of the Week feature puts the spotlight on smooth and contemporary jazz recording artists. This week, hear from trumpeter and composer Rick Braun. Enjoy some prime cuts and win his brand new release, Rick Braun Essentials. That's Artist of the Week on Thursdays during the noon hour on Jazzy 88 WFSK, where Nashville's Jazz Station. Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
To speak with Sharon or our guest, the phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810. Here again, Sharon Kay.
Alrighty, Nashville, Sharon Kay is in the house. Mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88 WFSK, Historic Fisk University, and What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, Independent Agent, State Farm Insurance. We thank you so very much for supporting What's the 411. And here's the quickness on weather. Cold. Okay, that's all you need to know. 48 tomorrow, cold tomorrow night, 29. Cold, I'm telling you, cold. That's the way it's going to be for the next several days, and that was your quick forecast. Now, I don't think I've ever talked with Dr. Grant before, have I? Well, I'm just happy to have him on, and Dr. Donald Grant Jr., he is a clinical psychologist, a consultant, and author. And Dr. Grant, how are you? Staying warm wherever you are?
I am well. Thank you so much for having me, and I'm actually in Los Angeles, so I am perfectly warm.
Oh, I know, that's right. I have to say it like that. I'm like, okay, California.
Yes, but I did grow up in Buffalo, so I do have empathy for the cold weather.
Oh man, this year's been brutal. Anyway, I appreciate you so much for making yourself available, and the time is important on what you're going to be talking about today with our audience, and I already feel from reviewing your work that I'm going to keep your phone number, brother. I'm going to have to circle back with
that.
Oh, yes, I got to circle back with you. And so much of your work is reminiscent of so many other folks that I have had on the broadcast over the years and who have just explained things and broke them all the way down so that people had a clear understanding. Before I start talking about some of the work that you've done, I would really appreciate just your pure opinion on some things in the news involving anti-bias or involving race and color or CRT or whatever you want. It's all in that cauldron of crazy. So could you please give me your clinical perspective?
Well, you know, there's so much to unpack there, and a lot of it will certainly get into throughout the conversation. But, you know, when you talk about current events, and, you know, I think one of the big things that a lot of people are not paying enough attention to is the new census data demonstrating that for the first time since the census was being taken in 1870, the white population has declined in size as the populations of color have increased. And when we talk about things from a clinical perspective, you know, we talk about the tangible pieces that bring about the thoughts and the ideas. We call them triggers in the clinical world. And when you talk about white identity and white supremacy, that census report was a trigger clinically for the intergenerational messages that many communities have been getting. And as a result, we are seeing all sorts of fireworks. And that's all connected to CRT and parents threatening the lives of school board members. It's crazy, but it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me add to that the latest out of Nashville, the GOP. You know, we're in the state capitals, so I can look out the window and see it. One of the representative, I think his last name is Halsey, he is coming up with a resolution that would basically say there's no such thing as discrimination in the military. And, you know, it just hasn't existed. And that it was made up.
Well,
did I lose
it? You know, in the same way, can you hear me?
Okay, now, it dipped down for a second. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry about that. When people speak from a privileged perspective, they oftentimes cannot see, you know, the other lens. When you think about the men who are making and creating legislation as it relates to women's bodies and things like that, these men have no clue about these experiences. And so when you think of the people who are saying, well, I don't want my kid to feel bad when you teach him about racism, and there is no discrimination in these institutions that have been grounded in discrimination throughout their entire existence, sometimes they're speaking from a perspective that they just can't see. But at other times, it's more of a deliberate effort to maintain a system. And I think that's where the danger is that we have to be critically aware of, is that there's deliberate efforts to maintain systems that exist. And if we don't talk about that, if we don't talk about the fact that we're creating laws and changing legislation in order to perpetuate a system, we're in danger. We're in serious danger.
Well, that is why I have people such as yourself on, you know, because this is, you know, in the radio landscape, in the media landscape, you know, it's trailer truck load full of conservative, right-wing, fanatical talk people. It's a ton of them. And they're on all the dials all over everywhere. But there's not enough, or there's very few that speak in the opposite direction of that. And I do not want to see a complete and total brainwashing of the community that I live in, vote, and pay my taxes.
Yes.
And as a member of the, longtime member of the media, I have to do my part. I mean, I you know, I didn't drink the Kool-Aid.
Yeah. We have to remember, though, we have to also pay attention to the origins of mass media, you know, and understand that sensationalization of racism and discrimination were a real critical part of that money-making philosophy on how newspapers sold. When you look at old stories of reporters reporting on lynching, the details were so graphic. It was clear that these individuals were there. And the stories that they created based on that were used to maintain certain imagery about blacks in Reconstruction South. And so the origins of journalism fit right there, and they are deliberately very homogeneous.
Yes, yeah. Well, and, you know, there has to be balance. You know, it cannot all be a diet of fat and grease. We have to balance this out. And, you know,
yes,
there's just people, if they don't hear anything different, they're all going to, you know, go off the cliff. And I just, I can't. I worked in corporate media for a long time. And
yeah.
I'm not there anymore, praise the Lord. I'm in African American Public Radio. If I can't talk about being black and the experience of a black person on a black owned and operated radio station by one of the nation's oldest HBCUs, I would like to know where in America can I speak to issues that impact the people that look like me? Where?
You know? Yes.
I mean, seriously.
Yes.
So, you know, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. And
as you should.
Okay,
as you should. And we need these spaces, and we need this to exist in other spaces, too, because that's the other part of the concern.
Yeah.
And I'm a proud HBCU graduate. I attended Hampton University. And so when I think about the fact that some of this is just reserved in spaces where everybody's not accessing typically, I need this at Fisk, I need this at UCLA, I need this at Harvard. Everybody needs access to this. We need to normalize this media because it's everybody's story.
Well, it is, and you know, I don't pick my guests based on race and color. I interview just as many white authors, and I've interviewed Hispanic authors and people from other countries, so that's not my trip. I'm just saying that people need something else. You need some vegetables in your diet, okay? Y'all need some water sometime. You need something else. Yes, you need something to grow with. Because, I mean, to me, I can just see it eating people alive in terms of what a waste their life would be if they just had this, you know, just had this hate. It would eat away at people.
Yes, 1,000%. You're 1,000% right. And with that echo chamber, we lose all opportunities to get it right.
Absolutely. So, Dr. Grant, with some of the work that you have been doing is, you talk about to the audience about mindfulness, and of course that's one of those words that everybody's using it now. It's mindfulness. You know, it's like this and that. Can you talk, share with us about how you use that technique in understanding racism?
Because
that one is what we all need to exhale. Including my mainstream audience that are listening as well. They're listening. They want to see honey. They want to see what Sharon Kane, they were talking about with that fist. They want to know. Yes, they do. They know me.
No, that sounds good. Well, you know, I started my business in 2013, and it's called Mindful Training Solutions.
Yeah.
And this was before this was all, you know, the en vogue term to use.
Yeah.
And so for me, I use mindfulness in this work to help people understand how the brain works, understand how they look at the world, because learning only occurs when you eliminate shame and guilt.
Oh, wow.
Mindful practices tell us to look at our experience without judging it. So let's say you're driving down the highway and somebody cuts you off on the highway, and you have in your head, you have an image of who this person is, and you ride up to them and you say, I knew it was you. And then you think, oh my gosh, I can't believe I had that ageist or that sexist or that homophobic thought. But the fact of the matter is that you did.
Yeah.
And mindfulness allows us to take that experience of that behavior and say, where did that come from?
Yeah.
I'm not going to feel guilty or shameful.
Yeah.
And that allows us to break into our racism, our xenophobia.
Okay.
Because now we've eliminated the judgment. Now we can say, okay, that was sexist, but I get why it was, and I need to pay attention to it.
Right. And then they can move through it. Let's take a short time out.
Move through it.
Yeah, that's what it's all about, y'all. This show is an empowerment and encouragement broadcast. We want to help you get on the other side of this foolishness, and then you can enjoy your life. Let's take a time out, and then we'll be right back.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay?
Want to give your opinion today? The phone lines are open. give us a call at 329-8810. 329-8810.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Life insurance is one of those subjects that makes people want to change the subject rather than admit they probably don't have enough. That's why State Farm agent Terry W. Jones focuses on how the benefits of life insurance actually live on by asking people to think in terms of life without having to sell the house, insurance, or life without having to give up college, insurance. Find out how the benefits of life insurance can live on for your family. Call State Farm agent Terry W. Jones in Nashville at 615-256-6066 or online at terrywjones.net and put the life back in life insurance.
Good afternoon. Still working at Sirius Rec in Rutherford County, 848 westbound, right at Elmaville Road. The accident reconstruction team's been out there for quite some time. At least you know about what's going on in that section of Rutherford County. Traffic's building now, trying to get out to Murfreesboro on 24 going east. This traffic report brought to you by Prince's Hot Chicken. I'm Commander Chuck with your on-time traffic.
Support for WFSK comes from TPAC, featuring a book by Tina Fey. Mean Girls tells the story of a naive newbie who falls prey to a trio of lionized frenemies. Entertainment Weekly calls it a marvel, dazzling and hilarious. And USA Today says we'll let you in on a little secret because we're such good friends. Coming soon to Tennessee Performing Arts Center, February 8th through the 13th. Tickets at TPAC. .org.
Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
To speak with Sharon or our guest, the phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810. 329-8810. Here again, Sharon Kay.
Alrighty, Nashville. Sharon Kay is in the house. Mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88 WFSK Historic Fisk University. And What's the 411 is proudly celebrating 20 years of continuous broadcasting. And if it had not been for the goodness of the Lord. Now, let me say thank you for being here today to clinical psychologist, consultant, and author, Dr. Donald E. Grant. And he's just really opening the Venetian blind just a little bit today because I can already tell we didn't book enough time with this brother right here because he's about to go deep on you, Nashville. And I'm looking at the clock saying I don't think so. But you are have quite a great deal of knowledge in working with communities and with populations and helping with bias and trainings. I know your trainings are probably, wow.
I get some good feedback about them. I do, and I'm excited to be able to serve in this purpose.
Oh, yeah. Now, when you do the trainings and you start talking about white supremacy, how much squirming is going on in the room?
Well, it's interesting because there's a lot of squirming, but what I make sure I do, because I am a historian and a researcher, I bring receipts with me. I bring the evidence, the details, and the data so that people know that these facts are not, they're not objective, they're not subjective. These are the truths, and it's impossible to not pay attention to. And so one of my goals is always to dismantle the doubt on the front end by providing hard evidence from the historical record that's indisputable.
Now, if there's a couple things I want to find out before we leave, and one of them is historical record, because that's part of the training that you conduct as our history is being revised, and as we speak, you talk about historical revisionism and Negroism.
Yes.
Well, tell us about that.
Well, when we talk about the revision of our world, we created this space where white superiority ideology could thrive, and that was by recreating the stories and images presented of us. And what we want to do is be able to decolonize all that information, meaning we want to take that out of the lens of the quote-unquote victor to be able to tell a more authentic story. Because what's happening is, as long as we continue to maintain these frameworks of this revised history, you know, in Texas they had a textbook that said that enslaved people were immigrants, and they had it in the same section. If we allow that to continue, we minimize the contemporary injuries that we receive from that intergenerational trauma and the intergenerational despotism of white ancestors.
So when, as do you see, how much of that do you see going on now, historically speaking? Like I was telling you about the legislator here in Tennessee that, you know, they're trying to blot out everything.
Yeah.
It's like, it's scary, man. I mean, seriously.
It's still going on. Once you make a practice illegal, it's kind of like when you work, when I used to do clinical work, when you would work with people suffering from addiction, and that was that whole one theoretical framework that said you got to replace this with something else. So if you couldn't smoke, and you got to chew carrot sticks, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens with white supremacy is that as soon as one of the major efforts are outlawed or no longer on vogue, like you just can't grab me off the street and hang me from a tree anymore, right?
Yeah.
That's just not cool anymore to do inside white supremacy. And so each generation, it transitions to a new practice with the same goal of maintaining this ideology, but they have to choose a new practice. And so now we're going to change laws in Georgia and change the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're going to tell school districts they can't talk about racism,
mm-hmm,
or talk about any divisive,
mm-hmm,
issues. And so those become the new efforts to maintain these ongoing systems. The problem is that these are all being dismantled in ways they had not been dismantled before.
Right.
And people are seeing consequences in ways they had not been seen before. If you think about Emmett Till, his murderers never received retribution. His accuser never received retribution. And now we're seeing people go to jail for racism, lose their jobs. I'm not saying we're all on the other side of this, but I am saying there is a new page turning,
mm-hmm,
on this racial re-reckoning. And I put those four re's in there because this ain't the first time we've been here.
No, it's not. However, I do see some of the, I do recognize reverse on some things that, you know, are really, you know, the revamping of the education system, because our governor, that was like immediately, he rubber stamped the anti-CRT. Oh my God, he did it with the quickness. I'm like, man, that was fast.
Yeah.
You didn't even know what they were doing in the school system. And we, you know, it's a, if that's a college course, I don't think
yeah,
Junebug in the second grade would you know, be, or Jethro.
Junebug, JJ, or Aiden. Nobody's learning it. If they're not in law school, they're not learning it.
Right, and you would have to be in law school. He said law school, y'all.
Yeah, remember, they use these terms as dog whistles, right? This is another example of that transition. CRT is being weaponized in order to minimize exposure to the truth of American history.
Yes.
They're deliberately saying, we're using CRT as this kind of umbrella term that actually led to an outcome in the Virginia election. We're using the CRT as a term to let white people know that you have the right to tell people you don't want your white children to be exposed to the crimes of their ancestors.
Right.
That's a problem. That's a problem.
That is a real problem. That is setting those children up for all kind of problems when they find out that great-grandpa was in the Klan and did all that stuff. They're really going to be,
yeah,
like, oh, my God, yes, he was the one. It's, you know, I just don't, you know, you can't shield people from every single solitary thing, because to us, you know, it's okay to inflict this on black people and not worry about our feelings and things that we, you know, experience as a result, you know. So I just, you know, I don't know why our feelings don't matter either. If we're hurt by it, then why don't you care about that? Okay.
That's because we're not human.
No.
You know, it's been systematically placed into our environment that we're less than human to warrant the treatment that we've been given. You know, and the dangers of these ongoing lives are real. I think about the outcome of the gentleman who murdered Ahmaud Arbery and the fact that they're in jail forever now.
Yeah.
My new book is called White on White Crime, and this is a perfect example of how this father took his son out to do something that his grandfather probably told him he could do.
Yeah.
And suddenly the ecosystem has changed where that's no longer viable. And you got these white kids. There was just a story here in Southern California yesterday at a basketball game where a black boy playing basketball in a predominantly white school, there was a kid in the stand who was yelling, "How did he get out of his chains?
Oh, wow.
Who let him out?" And this is a current high school student.
Wow.
His parents are feeding him the lie of white supremacy and the safety that used to exist. That safety doesn't exist anymore. And as long as white people continue to identify that as safety in their development, because their kids are going to continue to lose. This boy is not going to be able to get into Harvard once his face is splattered all over the news for this.
Right. Wow. That's awful. I mean, that has to be something that was they learned. That's learned behavior from the house.
1,000%.
Yeah, that's
all. And endorsed by the environment. Learn in the house, but endorsed by the environment.
Yeah, and they've heard that from for sure. And as I said early on, I told you, Dr. Grant, I got his number, y'all. Because I have so many. Now, here's what I'd like to ask, and I'm going to ask you this. I'll send you the information next time. But I want to drill down on Tennessee hasn't made the headlines like Georgia and Virginia have. But, we got some stuff up here in the state of Tennessee, brother, okay?
So, yes.
You know, we're not in the national news every night spotlight. But, so I want to send you some of the things that, because I just feel like that's all, you know, birds of a feather, they sure enough flocking together. And we don't want to leave this state out and untouched when telling the stories about these issues, because we're getting pressed down and shaken up here, and that is not a good feeling. Anyway, Dr. Donald E. Grant, we thank you so much for your work as a clinical psychologist, consultant, and author. And please tell the audience where to find your resources, your books, and find out more about the things that you do.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been such a great conversation. Our website is www.mindfultrainingsolutions, M-I-N-D-F-U-L, Training Solutions. And then you can find me on social media at Dr. Grant Jr. On Instagram and Twitter. I look forward to coming back and talking more and unpacking some of this really important stuff. And my books are available wherever you buy books, Amazon, wherever you'd like to go to grab those.
Absolutely. Well, I will certainly be circling back and having you on, and I thank you so much. And I hope that you have a nice warm day out there in L.A.
I won't rub it in. It's been a pleasure. You all stay warm.
Okay. All right. Thank you now.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You know, the folks in California, whenever I talk to them, it's just like, don't rub it in, y'all. I know you're enjoying your 70s and your 80s. I know you are. But anyway, all right, that's all we have for you, Nashville, OAL. You all have the very best of the best. And don't forget who loves you.
You've been listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station and its management.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.